Ryan Dixon and Rory Boylan host Tape to Tape, the hockey podcast by Sportsnet.
We're a different team, different look. We want to make some changes, and that's part of it. I like this. I like what he brings. He plays a fast game. He plays with energy. Moves the puck well, and he wants to play Montreal. So that means a lot for us.
Welcome to Tape to Tape, T2T. I'm Ryan Dixon. I'm a writer for Sportsnet.ca. With me in the booth, as always, Sportsnet's NHL editor, Rory Boylan.
It feels like just yesterday, Ryan, we were doing preseason predictions, wondering what the heck was going to happen with Vegas at the trade deadline when they got off to a great start, and it's draft week already. It really came up quickly on me.
We screwed up the predictions. Now it's time to screw up some trade predictions, because as we know, this is the time of year when players are moving all over the place. Free agency just a couple weeks off, but before then, we expect to see some serious moves. And in fact, we have already seen one, and we are of course going to talk about the Max Domi for Alex Galchenyuk trade. We'll also talk a little bit about the draft. You and I will, I think, take a look at the top and see who we think might be moving around. But we want to dive into this trade. We want to dive into where everyone's saying the draft begins at third overall with the Montreal Canadiens. No better person to chat about those items with than Sportsnet's Eric Engels. Eric, how you doing?
Well, you might have a better chance with Mark Bergevin, but I'll substitute.
Oh, well, we are happy to have you, because we know you're going to give it to us straight. We know you're going to tell us exactly what is going on inside your head and what you've seen with this team. And we're going to start with that trade that broke late Friday, well into the night, really. It was about 9:30, I think, when all of a sudden we saw Galchenyuk, long rumored to be on the move, a one-for-one deal for Max Domi of the Phoenix Coyotes. I think at least the early consensus was that this was a slam dunk win for Arizona, or people at least seemed to like the trade from the Coyotes' perspective. What did you make of that deal with a couple days to digest it and having spoken to some of the pertinent parties?
Well, nothing's changed for me in terms of my initial reaction, but I'm probably one of the 12 or 13% on everybody's Twitter poll that seems to believe that the Canadians might have gotten the better end of this deal. And I don't want anybody accusing me of being an apologist for Mark Bergevin or the Canadians. I think I've been highly critical of the work that's gone on going dating back to 2016-17 trade deadline, through unrestricted free agency, through what was a terrible, if not the worst season of the Bergevin tenure as GM in Montreal last year. But on this one, I don't think he got it wrong. And I think a lot of people in Montreal, I think the reaction, and mostly from Canadiens fans, because I think outside of Montreal, there's a lot of people that believe that it's a sure win for Arizona. But the reaction from Canadiens fans was hyperbolic. I know that's shocking for you guys to hear, with Canadiens fans getting a little overhyped and over emotional about something. But I think, you know, what it really spoke to and how angry they were about it speaks to their lack of faith in management currently. And I think, you know, they watched Alex Galchenyuk for 6 years in Montreal and saw a guy that wasn't necessarily handled properly, that, you know, in all this search for a centerman in Montreal, they drafted this kid to be one. They wanted to take their time in the initial stages of his career and not force him into the position. They wanted him to learn and obviously appreciate what it takes to play that position. And then finally they opened up the floodgates and said, you know what, we're going to commit to him there and give him a real shot. And once they finally did, you know, he had a strong back half of the 15-16 season where the Canadians were totally out of it. They were terrible. You know, they had lost Carey Price for a long time, and he ends up scoring, I think, 16 goals from February on, and everybody's excited. And he comes back the next year as the number one center between Pacioretty and Radulov, and puts up 23 points in his first 25 games and gets banged out with a knee injury and doesn't seem to find his win after that. And I think, you know, I understand the people that believe that the Canadians mismanaged this asset. And in fact, I think that's an undeniable truth here. But too many of those people throughout the 6 years that Alex Galchenyuk was here, and now that he's gone to Arizona, have ignored his role in why he did not pan out and why he did not reach his potential in Montreal. And, you know, you talk about a young player, but after 6 years of experience and 418 games in the NHL, we could see there's still untapped potential there, but we also know that there are certain things that if he hasn't gotten by now, it's not going to happen for him. I don't find he played his best hockey when the pressure was on. That's an issue in a place like Montreal. And I do believe that, yeah, he may excel as a centerman in Arizona, but not without warts. And his focus on the offensive side of the puck does not mitigate his deficiencies on the defensive side. And like I said, I just don't know how much room there is to grow for him in certain departments. I still think he'll do well. I think this is probably a win-win situation for both teams where both players need a change of scenery. But I really like Max Domi as a player. I really like his competition level. I really like the way he competes. I love the way he plays in all areas of the ice. And I get the feeling that him being in a market like this is going to bring out the best in him.
Eric, I was out when this news broke on Friday, and I had the same initial reaction a lot of people do, like, oh my goodness, I can't believe the Habs did this. And then I got home and I looked at it a little bit closer, and you see the last 3 years, the players are similar in their point production in that they were above 50 points 3 years ago. Both were limited to around 59, 60 games the following season, but their points per game went up. And then this year, again, kind of similar. The difference was that Galchenyuk is going to bring it to you in goals, and Max Domi is going to bring it to you more as a playmaker. And I think, like you kind of alluded to, he's got more of an edge to his game there. So maybe just tell us about the differences in these players, what Domi is going to bring to the Habs that maybe Galchenyuk wasn't, and why you think, where you think maybe he fits into the lineup. Like, is he going to get a look at center, or is he strictly a winger?
I think he's going to be a winger, Rory. And, you know, the funny thing is like, you know, we go on the statistical analysis because we have to. That's what we have. That's the evidence that we have. But we also know that these are two players that underperformed in their different situations. And there are also two players that, you know, didn't had their respective issues off the ice, whether it was motivation factors for Domi in Arizona, whether it was issues with Galchenyuk in Montreal, drama surrounding him a couple of years ago, and obviously this year with rumors circulating about him. You know, I don't want to get into the specifics of that, but there are factors that lead you to believe that, you know, these are two guys that probably needed a change of scenery, or at least would appreciate one. And I got the sense, speaking to both of them over the weekend, that, you know, that was the case. As far as Domi's concerned, I try to look at the reaction from Canadians fans and say to myself, what do they not know about Domi and how can we get that information to them? So one of the first things I did was scour around for Shane Doan's number, and I gave him a call because he played with Domi and scored 28 goals next to him, the guy who was in the twilight of his career, and I don't think anybody expected him to do that. And I don't know if I could have spoken to anybody who would offer better insight on what this player is about. And the things that really stood out to me in my conversation with Doan, which you can read, you know, all the money quotes that ended up in my story on Sportsnet.ca on Saturday, he could not say enough about Domi's competitiveness, but also how much he makes players around him better. And you could talk about the need for goal scoring in Montreal, but if you look up and down their lineup, especially at the forward position, especially knowing the lack of depth they have up the middle, I'm not sure how many players you can point at and say that guy makes other players around him better. They had that with Radulov and they lost it. They had that with Jonathan Drouin's potential, but they haven't yet seen it. And I believe it's coming. So, you know, to add a player like Domi, I think is great. I think he had 18 goals in his first season in the NHL, the last two seasons at 9, and we know that 4 of them last year went into an empty net, so that's not good production. But, and we know that goals are at a premium in the NHL, and that's why a lot of people, you know, favor Arizona in this trade. But I believe Max Domi is capable of scoring 18 to 20 goals a season, but more importantly, the appeal of a player that makes players around him better is an exciting one for a team that desperately needs players like that.
Right now, I think it's fantastic the Canadians have two players named Max on their team. That is a great start for any team. But we don't know for how long, Eric. With all the drama around this trade, with the anticipation of the draft and some moves there, who knows? And we're going to get to that. But let's just do a quick check-in on Max Pacioretty. We've heard some chatter that they've spoken to him about a possible extension that could still be part of a bigger picture ploy to move him to a team and get more back. What's your up to the minute on Max Pacioretty?
Well, you know, I've been doing a lot of research on the subject over the last couple of weeks and checked in with various sources on it. And where I think we're at is we're in a bit of a holding pattern, if only for the fact that we don't know yet if John Tavares is going to field offers as an unrestricted free agent. If he gets to that point, that window where it opens up after the draft this weekend, you know, all bets are off in terms of what's going to happen with Pacioretty. I think if the Canadians get the opportunity to talk to Tavares and they believe that they can get him and they end up with him for whatever reason, and I would strongly suggest that it's a real dim possibility at this stage, but if that happens, that could be the one scenario that keeps Pacioretty in Montreal long term. That said, what the holdup is that if they find out, and what we believe is most likely, that John Tavares isn't going to come to Montreal, then they have to start focusing on plan B, C, and D. And plan B, C, or D could involve a trade with a guy like Ryan O'Reilly. So, you know, is Pacioretty potentially the conduit to bringing that player here? I think a lot of people are looking here to Friday and saying to themselves, you know, Montreal, Pacioretty, they could potentially move. They could potentially go to Ryan O'Reilly. But Ryan O'Reilly is not plan A in Montreal. John Tavares is. So that's what makes it complicated. Here's what I've gathered on the Pacioretty front in terms of information. The Canadians and Pat Brisson and Max Pacioretty, who he represents, are working on a contract. They're working on a contract potentially create some cost certainty in the event that they trade him. The obstacles to getting it done are the teams that are involved in trade discussions with the Canadians about Pacioretty. Carolina is a team that is interested in Pacioretty, but would they be willing to spend long-term on Pacioretty? And would Pacioretty be willing to sign long-term with Montreal to be traded to Carolina? That's a question we have to consider. The Florida Panthers are a destination of choice for Pacioretty, and they remain interested in him. The question is, what will they give up to get him? And I think in an ideal world, Pacioretty would sign a deal. You know, he wants to stay in Montreal, but if he has to be traded, would like to be in Florida, and that would be an easy way for him to get a deal done and then get traded. Then there's the Buffalo Sabres, who are interested in obviously a fit with what I was just talking about with Ryan O'Reilly. And then there's a couple of outside teams like the Calgary Flames, who obviously need some top-end scoring added to their lineup, and the Los Angeles Kings, who are looking at the same thing and obviously involved in the Ilya Kovalchuk sweepstakes. So there's so many balls in the air, and I think there's a couple of things that delay what the immediate future holds for Pacioretty. One option that we can't discount in this whole thing is that he isn't able to get a deal done because he's not sure where they're going to send him. And they aren't able to get a return for him that they really want between now and the beginning of the season. And he plays as a pending unrestricted free agent for the Montreal Canadiens. And inevitably, potentially down the line, if they're not as competitive as they should be, he moves at the deadline for a rental type price. So it's, I don't want to be so long-winded about it and offer every option on the table, but that's really where we're at in the process here. So, you know, what looked like a 90% proposition that he'd be traded between now and the draft, going back to the trade deadline, now looks more like a 50-50 situation, and it depends on whether plan A happens or plan B, you know, plan C, plan D. You guys could figure out the rest.
Well, if there are a ton of options in play for Pacioretty, I suspect the same can be said of the Canadians heading into the draft. Here's what we know. They are slated to pick third overall. Rasmus Dahlin is getting drafted by Buffalo first overall. Andrei Svechnikov, we're almost certain, will be going to the Carolina Hurricanes at number two. Now, how in play is, I'm going to throw a lot at you, so brace yourself. How in play is that third pick the Canadians hold? How far do you think they would drop? And the consensus number three player on most lists is Filip Zadina. You get some variance, but I would say he's the consensus number three. However, the Canadians have long been crying out for help at center. They could use help on the blue line as well. Do you think there's a chance they, I guess for lack of a better way of putting it, draft for need, and obviously the name of Jesperi Kotkaniemi, which we're all trying to learn quickly on the fly, has risen up as a center who could hold appeal? Hey, there are also some defensemen, Quinn Hughes, Noah Dobson, Evan Bouchard, who probably aren't going to help you in the fall, but an area, again, for a team that just traded Mikhail Sergachev a year ago. How do you untangle all that? And let's just start with, how in play do you think that third pick is?
Well, it's really interesting, Ryan. And you know, you did a good job kind of going through all of it there. I would say that the Canadians are not going to exclusively draft for need at third. But the player in Jesperi Kotkaniemi that fills that need at center ice might be the player that they believe is the best player available at three. And that's the intel that I've gathered over the last week. And going back a week ago exactly, I wrote about the fact that the Canadians are not going to take this player at third overall with Sedina available and being separated, because that was the intel that I had at the moment. And I felt that they were strongly looking at the possibility of talking to Arizona, and that Max Domi's name was involved is what I led my column with. And sure enough, you know, so I was kind of blindsided with Domi and Galchenyuk going one for one. I think there were larger discussions being had there, obviously. And it's all to say, you know, they have everybody guessing. You can make a case for why they'll take the center in Jesperi Kotkaniemi, or they'll take one of the elite defensemen that are available in this draft, and there's a lot of them. And you can make the case that they'll take Zadina, and because he's the best player available. And I think, you know, having heard all those things already, it's hard to pin it down. But if I was going to wager based on what I've heard over the weekend and going into today, they would like to potentially trade down and get Kotkaniemi and acquire another asset that is NHL ready in the process. And we all know that that's a difficult thing to do. And the one thing that I learned over the weekend is that I think if they're not able to do that, they're comfortable with the decision to take Kotkaniemi at three overall and feel that they can make the case that he's the best player available and also fills a need. The one thing that I got to say is, even if you didn't have the information that I came across this weekend or last week when everything was totally different, you could deduce a lot just from the comments that Mark Bergevin has made over the last year. And, you know, the first one is, and this is, he's been saying for 6 years, you don't trade for a number one center, they're never available. You don't sign one on the unrestricted free agency market because they never hit it, and you have to draft them. Well, here's your opportunity to draft the best center available in this draft. And I don't see how anybody is going to throw his feet to the fire over that if he ends up doing it. The other sides of it are is that when we went to the draft lottery, he was adamant about the fact that the idea of trading the third overall pick was not one he was really entertaining, because he said, you suffer so much. Dale Talon had taught him that you suffer so much to acquire this pick that it costs you a season and so much pain that it's very hard to give up on it. And that when he was in Chicago, you know, that type of pick was used on Patrick Kane. It was used on Jonathan Toews. You know, these are elite players that are the foundation of Stanley Cup wins. And so it would take so much for him to even consider it. And then, you know, post Domi Galchenyuk, he comes out and says, we're entertaining discussions. We've let people know that, you know, there's possibilities there, but it's difficult. And he's not sure what the incentive is for other teams to move up to his position. So there's a change in the verbiage there that really opens up the door and makes you realize, you know, it seems as though they've narrowed down their ideas here. And I really believe that in picking the best center available to them, or picking the best defenseman available to them, though I think it'll be the center, they're giving themselves an opportunity to say, we took the best player available and we took him at a position that actually helps us more down the line. So it's the most intriguing thing, and I hate to talk in circles about all the possibilities that are happening here, but that's based on all the information I've gathered.
Kotkaniemi is fascinating, and I'm curious just to get your take on what he is, whether or not he would be in this Habs lineup next year, or is, you know, would need a couple more years or not, because he really is a late bloomer here. In our last draft rankings, which were put up at the lottery, he was ranked 19th, and that was the third-ranked center. And he really had a strong under-18 tournament with Finland. a big center, you know, for a draft that is really lacking for those high-end centers, to now hear the suggestion that Kotkaniemi could go third overall because of his skill and because he fits in so well there. I mean, what have you heard about his game, and how long is it going to be for him to slide into that lineup if the Habs do take him?
Yeah, I think the belief and the consensus belief is that at worst he's going to be a second-line center. I think if the Canadians chose him third overall, they would have to believe that he could be prepared to play as early as next season, even if the consensus is that he may need a year or two, work on his skating stride, which seems to be the one thing that people have questions about, maybe because stylistically it doesn't look great, or maybe because it really does need work. All that said, you know, if he's not the youngest player available in this draft, he's one of the youngest players, a late birthday, and I think a lot of the teams out there believe that what he did against men in the Finnish Elite League, knowing that he's one of the youngest players in this draft, and what he showed at the World Under-18s, and how he maybe performed in fitness testing, in interviews, and what they learned about him. You know, the Canadians were one of three teams to take him out for dinner at the draft. They obviously learned a few things there, but, you know, the amount of research that goes into drafting these kids is unbelievable. And I really do believe, you know, we've seen it, and I've spoken to a number of scouts that believe that the Canadians wouldn't be totally off the board to pick him at third overall. So you take all that into account. You take the fact that, you know, having spoken to Trevor Timmins roughly 2 months ago about this, and spoken to Bergevin since, you know, they don't necessarily feel that they have to graduate this player immediately, even if they take him third overall. And, you know, say they were to go with Zadina. Zadina's one of the more interesting cases in the draft because, you know, they had a situation, a coaching situation in Halifax where they knew they weren't going to be that great. They promoted their assistant coach from within, gave him an opportunity. And now that they're hosting the Mem Cup this year, they fired him and brought in a real coach right away. And there's a lot of belief out there that Zadina could really benefit to going back to Halifax, playing that many games, playing with some real structure that was not necessarily there this year. Nobody's a guarantee to play in the NHL, even if they're chosen in the top 10. But, you know, speaking of Trevor Timmins, he said that every single guy who's slated to go potentially in the top 10 this year has the ability to step into the league right away, and it's that type of league now, and he truly believes that, so I'll take his word for it. And I think if the Canadians deem that Kotkaniemi is the third best player in this draft, they must believe that he may possibly graduate to the NHL by this season.
Last one for you, Eric. We might as well throw it all at you while we have you. Free agency a couple weeks away. You said Tavares, the clear number one priority. That makes a ton of sense. We'll see if he actually makes it to the market. Just wondering if there's any second-tier names you'd throw out there. Anyone who you think the Canadians might be sniffing around that might be one or two categories below a guy like Tavares, because he's the only one in his category if he gets there. But are there any other guys who you think might be fits come the UFA season?
Yeah, Paul Stastny is the obvious one. It's a dangerous road to go down because he's 32 or 33 now. We all know that if the Canadians are going to be the team that signed him, they're going to have to offer up the best deal on the market. It could be a handcuffing move to make, knowing that there's some potential coming down the line. Say they do draft Kotkaniemi. They've got him and Ryan Poehling as a pretty good 1-2 or 2A and 2B combo there. And Paul Stastny, I'm not sure that the credentials would have anybody believing that he's a potential number one centerman. He could provide some insulation for Drouin at the position if he ends up getting signed here. I think it would cost them 4 or 5 years and a cap hit that probably costs too much for what he can deliver at this stage. But he's a really good player. He was a very impactful player in Winnipeg when he got traded there. Obviously a very impactful player in St. Louis with the way they reacted to losing him. If that ends up being the contingency and that's the way it goes and it doesn't cost them an asset to do it, maybe they'll justify those spendings. But I really think that after Tavares, the best option is through trade, and it very well may be Ryan O'Reilly, because you look at 5 years of production, he's between 55 and 65 points every year. He's locked up with a, you know, cost certainty, a long-term contract. I think it's another 5 years at $7.5 million, if I'm not mistaken. You guys could check that out and let me know if I got it wrong and give me a call later and tell me. But he's, to me, the best option after Tavares, even if it ends up costing an asset like Pacioretty. So I guess we'll see how it's going to shake out. But I know that the Canadians are going to make the best offer that John Tavares will see if he fields offers. And I have no inclination or clue as to what John Tavares is going to do with that, or where his allegiances lie with New York, and whether or not he's really considering leaving, and whether or not he'd come to a place like Montreal. And I don't care really what anybody says. I don't think they know either. I don't think anybody, whether they've spoken to Pat Brisson or spoken to John Tavares' father or whoever, nobody has really gotten this answer out of Tavares himself. And if they did, we'd have heard about it by now. So I can't wait to see what this guy's going to do. He has the potential to be the biggest marquee free agent signing to have left the city that drafted him and the team that drafted him in years. I can't think of a bigger one. So I guess, you know, all eyes are on that, and then everything flows from there.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on today, Eric. There is, depending on what happens, we may have you back very, very soon, because as detailed, there are a lot of things in play for the Habs. Thanks so much, buddy.
My pleasure. Take care, guys.
All right. That is Sportsnet's Eric Engels. He covers the Canadians for Sportsnet.ca. Fascinating to see what the Habs will do in the coming days and weeks. But there's lots of other drama going on, too. We're going to talk about all of that on the other side of the break on Tape to Tape. Welcome back to Tape to Tape. We are talking about the draft that is coming up on Friday, looking ahead to free agency. Rory, there was a time where we were kind of rubbing our hands together thinking John Tavares might be the one. He might be the guy who is in a superstar category who actually makes it to the open market. Eric Engels spoke at length about how hard the Canadians would be in on that, to say nothing of probably, you know, 29 other teams. Everyone would want to come to the table, but more and more, it sort of looks like he's not going to get there either. It seems like when the dust settles, he's going to stay with an Islanders team that will be in a new arena in a couple weeks. And all along, when talking about Tavares, because we've been talking about this for about 2 years, the sense has been he was going to give the Islanders every last chance to make this happen. Lou Lamoriello comes in as the new GM. It feels like it's at least 51% now that he's going to stay on Long Island.
Yeah, it seems to be turning. I was always trying to approach this very cautiously. My approach was always, I can't buy into this is going to be the guy who leaves until he actually does it. One of these big guys has to. I mean, Stamkos, it looked like he was going to be the one to do it, and then he signed just a couple days before July 1 to stay in Tampa Bay. So it just doesn't tend to happen. Bergevin's right. You know, you can't trade for these guys. You can't get them on the free agent market because they always end up staying put. And the Islanders now have the first step that they took, which was really important, was to bring in a Lou Lamoriello type who could kind of settle this whole thing down, stabilize that front office, put it on stable footing. You know, Garth Snow always had one foot in trying to improve this team, but never really willing to give up first-round picks or high prospects to get a bigger player to really push this thing forward. Very, very cautious in that way, which has been both good and bad. They've brought through some really good prospects over the years, and they sit today with two first-round picks that they didn't trade at the trade deadline because they were both had the chance and ended up being lottery picks. So they both could have been 1-2, you know? So now you've got trade chip if you want to approach it that way. I think everybody believes that Lou Lamoriello is a guy capable of kind of getting the wheels going again on this Islanders team. There's a lot of work, though. I mean, everybody knows they need a goalie first and foremost, but there's a ton of work to be done on that blue line too. So whether or not that can be done via trade with one of these first round picks or whatever it is, at least if you keep Tavares, you know you're going into next year with him as your number one center, Matt Barzal as your number two, and that's something a lot of teams don't have, are two high-end centers of that caliber. Just that in and of itself gives you a leg up on a lot of other teams. It really does look like he's going to end up staying here a lot of time between now and then. And I think the indication, we're not going to know for sure whether he's going to stay or go until we get to that negotiating window right after the NHL draft. Do the Islanders trade him at that time? Because they're only going to do that if they feel they can't get him. And if he doesn't get traded, then I have every reason to believe he's going to stay.
Well, a couple chips in Lamoriello's back pocket. The Islanders don't have a top 10 pick, but they have the first two outside the top 10. 11th overall, that's their pick. 12th overall from the Calgary Flames. You mentioned the need for goaltending. I mean, you look at those two picks right there. Maybe if you, you know, you go to the Washington Capitals, who knows if they want to trade to a direct rival, but you know, maybe you flip picks and you stay in the first round and you end up with Philip Grubauer. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But the Islanders do seem to be one of those teams, because of having two picks, that could be in the middle of some action when the first round kicks off on Friday.
Especially if somebody falls more than we expect them to. Like if Kotkaniemi goes up into that top three, top 10, which it looks like he's pretty much a lock to do at this point as the number one center off the board. Well, he's coming into that late. He wasn't a top 10 prospect 2 months ago. So that's going to knock somebody else down. And, you know, if you get a Noah Dobson falling, or, you know, somebody, there's a lot of defensemen. Adam Bockfist is kind of being forgotten about as the second Swedish defenseman, an undersized guy, very good skater, can move the puck, but some questionable defense. You know, somebody is going to fall into pick 11 or 12. And if there's a team that didn't think that they were going to have a shot at him or couldn't trade into the top 10 to get that guy, and now he's available at 11 or 12, well, now maybe you can make a deal with the Islanders here. Maybe it's even somebody who's already picking in the top 10 that now is still in that rebuild mode that wants to get a second pick and a second really high prospect. Last year, the New York Rangers were the team that surprisingly traded into the top 10, giving up Derek Stepan, Antti Niemi to Arizona. They get pick 9, I think it was, where they took Elias Anderson. So a lot of movement can happen, and I think the team to watch is the Islanders for all this stuff around them with Tavares, the fact that they hold those two high picks. They can go in a lot of different directions, you know, try and add for now or really continue to take a patient approach and just get some more prospects and maybe deal with the trades a little bit later. But as we've seen over the last few years, the NHL draft is what the trade deadline used to be. The big blockbusters happen. Teams really start to identify themselves for next year in terms of what they do now and in the lead up to July 1. So the Islanders, to me, are team one to watch, and there are a lot of other interesting teams to watch kind of who both hold and don't hold first-round picks in this draft.
Well, you mentioned the Rangers. It's a bit of a surprise move last year. They have three first-round picks. We can circle them as a team that have been very open about rebuilding, but also you can never rule out anything with the Rangers.
No.
It wouldn't surprise me or you or anyone if they made a strong play in free agency or maybe package a couple picks for a young player. You know, who knows what kind of player they might be eyeing, an under 25 guy. And what also adds a layer of intrigue is I'm looking at teams in the top 10. The Oilers are at number 10. The Blackhawks are at number 8. There are two teams right there that I would say are interested in being as good as they can be next season, right? Some of the teams drafting in the top 10 are teams that are, I mean, everyone would like to be good next year, but some teams have a longer plan. The Blackhawks are trying to rebound while they still have this core. The Oilers followed up a great year with a miserable year. You sort of wonder if that incentivizes teams to essentially do what Arizona did last year when it was trying to get a lot better by moving, I think it was 7th overall maybe, with the Rangers. You know, maybe there's a possibility there where Chicago or Edmonton, two teams that are saying, well, we're not going to get someone at 8-10. Chances are that's going to help us next year.
Yeah.
What can we do to make us a better team in October?
Edmonton, for sure. I think it's going to be a disappointment if Edmonton comes out of the draft weekend and they've made that first-round pick and they haven't traded it for something that's going to help them a little bit. I mean, that's a GM that is motivated to get this team back into the playoffs, because if they miss again next year, I can't see a way that he keeps his job. You know, there could be a lot more fallout if the Oilers miss again, so they should be really motivated. Chicago, I'm not sure about, because while they do have an eye on winning for sure, they don't have a lot of cap space right now, and they really need to start filling out their team and their prospect system with players who are going to be able to come in either next season or in the short term that are going to be making less than $1 million, or, you know, a little bit more than that after bonuses. Because, you know, you look at the way the cap is structured on that team, there's a lot of guys like Toews and Kane making $10.5 million, Seabrook and Keith still making a lot, Corey Crawford. There's not a lot of really productive players on cheap contracts right now. They need to add some more of that. So I think they might keep that pick and just add that player later on. We'll see. Maybe a trade comes up that you don't know. But Edmonton for sure is a team that I think has to make that, has to trade that pick. And the Rangers, I mean, they have, I think, about $25 million in cap space right now. Brady Shea is the big one that they need to sign off their defense, who's an RFA. Ryan Spooner was a good little addition after the trade deadline. He's a guy they need to sign too. Vlad Nemesnikov, who they got at the trade deadline, another RFA. But these guys combined aren't going to take up anywhere close to $25 million against the cap. You're holding three first-round picks. This is a team that is probably going to be in on Ilya Kovalchuk, probably going to be in on John Tavares if he hits the market. They're going to be on anybody who is going to come in and make that team a little bit better too. You still have a couple of years here where Henrik Lundqvist is under contract. I think that you want to win with this guy. You made two first-round picks last year where you got Elias Anderson in the top 10. You got Filip Hedl, who looked really good this season and got a little taste of the NHL. So they have a couple of guys to move on into the future here with, and they have a couple of guys who are in their early 20s already on the roster. So maybe those late first-round picks that they have at the back end of the first round are things that they can trade. I would be a little surprised if they traded their own first-round pick, but again, if it's something that gets this going and puts them back onto the map next year, I think that the Rangers are a team to watch behind the New York Islanders.
Let me put you on the spot a little. What do you make of Detroit? Sixth overall. Yeah. I look at the Red Wings. I'm not in love with any of their young players. I mean, Dylan Larkin, we all know, is going to be a fine, fine hockey player for a long time, but I don't know that he's driving you forward the way you would hope for a team that, you know, obviously has now missed the playoffs 2 years in a row. I can't claim to know a lot about their pipeline right off the top of my head, but I don't think there's any reason to look at the Red Wings right now and think that they're on the precipice of starting to really bounce back the other way. Do you think this is a team that, I mean, you're going to presumably make your pick at six? Do you just kind of hold your cards and see what you can get there? Should they be trying to maybe trade down and just accumulate, trade your six and see if you can get two in the first or whatever, build down the line?
See, I could see Ken Holland going that road because he might hold the key to this first round for a lot of teams. If Hepaniemi goes third, and that's going to move, you know, somebody like Zadina for sure is going to fall. So, there's going to be a defenseman who's going to fall here to six that is probably a top three, top four guy maybe. And if the Red Wings want to, they can, you know, step right in and pick up this player who has fallen, or they can step back and say, look, there's a lot of interest in this guy. They're getting a lot of calls. Trade this pick for whatever package you can and really blow it out, because they hold seven picks in the first three rounds this year. They hold their own first round pick next year, 2 seconds and 2/3. So already they've kind of started to accumulate a lot of draft picks. They've got most of their high end prospects, I think, are already in the NHL, but they got guys like Evgeny Svechnikov, who's Andre's brother, who's going number two. He's not as you know, in the same pedigree or anything, but a guy who can score goals. Michael Rasmussen, big power forward. He was kind of the anti-analytics pick of the first round last year, but he's been a productive player in his junior career. Dennis Chalowski, another highly regarded prospect. So there are guys here that are going to be coming in soon. And I look at this team and I don't see any way Detroit is going to challenge for a playoff spot. When you look at that division, Tampa Bay, Boston, and Toronto, the three teams that got in there this year, you could certainly see a path for Montreal to get back up into challenging if they make certain moves this offseason. Ottawa is probably not going to get up into that, but Buffalo, when they get Rasmus Dahlin in here, maybe that accelerates them a little bit more too. I just don't see the path for Detroit. So for me, there's still a bit of a long-term build here. Ken Holland just signed an extension with the team, so he's not going anywhere in the near future, so he can kind of take his time. And if they get to that sixth pick and it's a guy that they're like, we can live with this guy, maybe we can pass on him, I think the road that he might take there is to trade the pick for another first-round pick, maybe a little bit further down, and then a prospect or a couple more picks later on, just to kind of broaden this pipeline of prospects that they've got.
Yeah, the Wings hold Vegas's first-rounder from the Tatar trade. They also have Ottawa's second-rounder. We have to talk about Ottawa. Right now, indications are, while not indications, a fairly direct comment by the team, they have said, we're keeping that pick, we're going to make the pick. Who knows?
Gamesmanship?
Is it gamesmanship? Does that view change given all that's gone on in Ottawa? I encourage you, if you haven't already, check out the 31 Thoughts podcast where Elliot Freeman and Jeff Merrick dive right into this. Elliot is of the point of view that if you're Ottawa, you take a knee now. You may have been on the verge of rebuilding completely anyway, but with everything that's come out with Mike Hoffman and with Erik Karlsson, you just look at this situation and say, we've got to reduce it to rubble and start again. And that would then involve giving up the fourth overall pick to Colorado as part of the Duchesne deal and at least keeping yourself in the running to get number one overall next year. Is that not starting to make just a little more sense for the Senators?
Yeah, I mean, I was always of the opinion that, you know, if you're going to trade Mike Hoffman, maybe you do it next year because you have to put yourself in a position where if you're going to keep this pick, you don't want to be worse next year and give Colorado a better pick. But now, given what's come out, it just seems inevitable that Mike Hoffman has to go this summer. It seems Erik Karlsson is unlikely to want to stick around in this situation too. And if you're going to trade him, it has to be now too. You want to trade him going into that year, not at the trade deadline when, you know, you're really forced into a corner here. But then what do you do with Mark Stone? Because that's also a guy that I think that if you're going to make this kind of change with your team, that's a guy that you're going to want to trade.
He's 26. You get a boatload.
You get a boat. Like, Erik Karlsson is your most valuable asset. Mark Stone is number two, and it's pretty close, I think.
When you factor in age, contract status,
absolutely.
He's RFA.
Yeah, he's not going to make as much money as Karlsson. There's just so much going for Mark Stone here. So the Senators could really take a lot of steps back here and completely nuke this whole situation, blow it up, trade all three of those guys. In that situation, you're probably also trading Matt Duchesne this summer, too, because he's going to be a UFA next year. He's already making $6 million, so that's going to be costly. It's going to be a long time before they get out of this mess. And then in that situation, if you are trading all those guys, I think you wait until the last second and your pick number four is now up on the clock and you say, okay, Colorado, you take this. Now, there's a lot of risk there. You want to make sure then you probably have to finish last place in the NHL next year, because if you finish anything other than that, you might slide out of the top four next year and then you do give up the better pick. It would be a risky call to make, but I think it would be riskier to keep that pick and trade all these guys to come back with what would for sure be a worse team next year and really put yourself in a spot where Colorado might end up with the first overall pick next year. That might be Jack Hughes, by the way, and that guy could be a generational talent and a center in this league.
We may be going chalk the first two picks, but this draft is the Wild West after that, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun because there really are all kinds of scenarios in play after you get past number one, Buffalo, number two, Carolina, and who knows with Carolina even. I mean, there's at least a little flicker there, but
take Svechnikov. It's a no-brainer to me.
Yeah, it could get very interesting very quickly after that. Okay, we will, of course, be back to recap the draft and hopefully a bevy of trades that occur over what is always an exciting draft weekend. It'll be this time around 2018 in Dallas, Texas. Everything is bigger down there, so hopefully the trades are as well. Make sure you check out the Tape to Tape podcast on iTunes. Go to sportsnet.ca. Follow Rory on Twitter at Rory Boylan, myself at Dixon on Sports, and check back next time for more glass rattling hockey action on Tape to Tape.
I see a red door as I want it into black. No colors anymore.